that song actually ends up being a really good introduction of what I'm going to be talking about today. I didn't know it was coming. And there's a bit of a story to that. This past fall, our simple church has been looking at what it means to be soul friends. And one of our times together, Dorothy had us do this song. She talked about how we need to lean on each other. And I think as I proceed, you'll see how that actually fits in really well with what I'm going to be talking about this morning. And where I'm going to start this morning is with the story of Ruth. I think it's a story many of us are familiar with. It's set in the time of Judges, and there's two key characters. There's Ruth, and then there's Boaz. And the narrative is structured into kind of four acts. In the first act, we have this kind of the backstory of gives us a setting, kind of the context here. And we hear about how Naomi and her husband and her two sons moved to Moab because there was a famine in the area around Bethlehem. And they spent quite a number of years there. Their sons grew up, married. And also, in Moab, Naomi loses her husband and then her two sons. So it's just her and her two daughters-in-law. Naomi decides to come back to Bethlehem. You know, she hears that there's food there. And we have her starting out with her two daughter-in-laws from Moab to come back to Bethlehem. And then she turns to her daughters and says, go back to your families, to your gods, to your hometown. And it's at this point that we have this really well-known expression of loyalty from Ruth towards Moab, where she says, where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there be buried. It's also in this first act that we hear Naomi's complaint against God. When she returns to Bethlehem, the town's women say, is this Naomi? And her answer is, this is not Naomi. Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. The second act opens at the harvest time. And I'm going to read a passage from that act here just shortly. And then we have the third act where there's a sort of process of marriage between that Ruth approaches Boaz and I guess basically proposes to him, to use our language, and he accepts and things get into motion. And then the fourth act is the conclusion. And a key piece of that conclusion is the genealogy that the book finishes with. So let's go back to Act 2. And I'd just like to read you a bit of the passage because it describes, you get a sense of the story here. You get a sense of Boaz and Ruth. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, let me go out to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor. Naomi said to her, go ahead, my daughter. So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she found herself working in the field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Now, Elimelech was Naomi's husband. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. Yahweh be with you. The Yahweh bless you, they called back. Boaz asked the foreman of his harvesters, whose young woman is that? The foreman replied, she is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters. She went into the field She went into the field and has worked steadily from the morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter. So Boaz said to Ruth, my daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in any other field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting, and follow along after the girls. I've told the men not to touch you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars that the men have filled. At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She exclaimed, Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner? Boaz replied, I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother, your homeland, and came to live with a people you did not know before. May Yahweh repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by Yahweh, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord, she said. You have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servant girls. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, Come over here, have some bread, dip it in the wine vinegar. When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Rather, pull out some stalks from the bundles and leave them there for her to pick up. Don't rebuke her. So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an elaf. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what was left over from what she had eaten. Her mother-in-law asked her, Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz. Yahweh bless him, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. He has not stopped showing kindness to his living and the dead. That man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen's redeemers. Then Ruth the Moabite said, He even said to me, Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, It'll be good for you, my daughter, to go with his girls, because in someone else's field you might be harmed. So Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean barley and wheat until the harvest was finished. And she lived with her mother-in-law. So here's the question I have for you. What do you notice Boaz is doing in that piece of passage there? Anyone want to make a guess of what kind of common theme that you see in Boaz? No? Okay. Here's what I see Boaz doing. He creates safe spaces for Ruth and Naomi. He invites Ruth to glean with his girls. He instructs the workers not to harm Ruth. He feeds Ruth and ensures that there's food for Naomi as well. The field workers are to make it easy for Ruth by purposely leaving grain behind. In short, what he does is he creates a space for Ruth to make a living. Later in chapter 3, we'll see how Ruth seeks protection in marriage from Boaz. And Boaz accepting that proposal, what he does is he makes a safe space for Ruth in the community. In Christianity, we often throw the word salvation around. I find it's really easy to use Christian jargon without really having an understanding what it actually means or the different meanings it might have. Salvation has been one of those words for me. What does it actually mean? In the Old Testament, a significant part of the meaning of salvation is the idea of space. There's this idea of, or the root meaning is to broaden, to enlarge. It is the idea of creation of space in the community for life and conduct. God rescues and delivers from the situation of opposition and peril to one of recovered spaciousness, prosperity, and well-being. So in the Exodus, we have this story of the Hebrews in Egypt, in slavery, confined. The Exodus, then, is that movement from that place of restriction, of enslavement, to a place of spaciousness, the Canaan, the promised land, a land that's described as a place of milk and honey, a place where people can live their ordinary, everyday lives out. Isaiah 54 talks about, enlarge the place of your tent, stretch out your curtains wide, do not hold back, lengthen your cords, strengthen your stakes, for you will spread out to the right and to the left. It's that idea of space. God works salvation by creating space. In the book of Ruth, Boaz provides salvation space for Ruth and Naomi. In the reading from Ruth, we heard how Boaz created these safe spaces for Ruth, the foreigner. He made space for her in the community. First with the field workers, and then through marriage. She now has standing in the community. She went from having no standing, even among the servant girls, to having standing in the community. It's creating a space for her. In the book of Ruth, there's a key word that captures this idea of safe space. And it's a Hebrew word that gets translated as cloak or wings. And the word is kanaf. And it means the idea of wing, extremity, edge, a winged border, a shirt or skirt, a corner of a garment. So in Ruth 2, we heard Boaz give this blessing to Ruth. May you richly be rewarded by Yahweh, the God of Israel, under whose wings, kanaf, you have come to take refuge. And then later, in the third act of Ruth, when Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached him quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man, and he turned and discovered a woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he asked. "I'm your servant Ruth," she said. "Spread the corner of your garment, kanaf, over me." In other words, spread your wings over me, make a safe space for me. This idea of kanaf, a word kanaf, also appears in the Psalms. Psalm 37:7. How precious is your loving kindness, O God, and the children of men take refuge in the shadow of your wings. Be gracious to me, O God, be gracious to me, for my soul takes refuge in you, and in the shadow of your wings I will take refuge until the destruction passes by. 61:4. Let me dwell in your tent forever. Let me take refuge in the shelter of your wings. Psalm 63:7. This actually is a special psalm for me, because when Elizabeth, our daughter, was a little girl, she found this psalm and pointed it out to Grace and I. And for a long time, this was part of our bedtime prayer ritual. Part of it is, "For you have been my help, and in the shadow of your wings I sing for joy." Psalm 91:4. He will cover you with his pinions, and under his wings you will seek refuge. The key word is refuge. Refuge is that idea of a safe space. In the shadow of God's protective cover, in that safe space, we can sing for joy. Salvation is God's work. It's God making safe spaces for us. We are three-dimensional beings, and space is necessary for us to survive. We see this idea of God's salvation-making, God's space-making, and God's compassion, his concern for justice, because really what that is, it's about maintaining safe spaces for people to go about their lives. We hear about the Syrian refugee crisis. The civil war in Syria has created an incredibly dangerous place. Refugees are simply looking for a safe place to live. My grandparents and my in-laws were also refugees, and by God's grace, escaped the anarchy and oppression of the Russian Revolution in the 20s to find a safe space in Canada. There's also a spiritual aspect to safe places. The New Testament uses a lot of words that related to slavery, freedom, imprisoned, and abundant life, that idea of space. Galatians, for example, has lots of these kind of words. And they're metaphors trying to describe life with or without Christ and apply to multiple facets. We're freed from the confines of shame. There's the burden of guilt that we're released from. As outsiders, we're made insiders in God's family. What is curious about the book of Ruth is that there's no historic moments, no famous characters, no kings, no passionate raging prophets, just people going about daily activities. For Boaz, there's no hint of grand achievement or noble aspirations. While we may talk of God in the small things, often I think we have this underlying assumption that God's power is best displayed in the grand and spectacular ways. And similarly, we need to be doing something big and to be spectacular so that we can build the kingdom of God. Henry Nouwen describes this as one of the temptations that Jesus faced in the desert. It's the temptation to be spectacular. Throw yourself from the top of the temple, get people's attention, and then you can do something big for God. Boaz is not caught with this temptation. Instead, in the unspectacular, ordinary of life, Boaz practices goodness and creates salvation space for two widows. The last act of the drama closes with a genealogy that shows how God uses salvation space that Boaz made. Because what we find out in that genealogy is that Ruth and Boaz are the great-grandparents of David. We also find out later on that David is the ancestor of Jesus. There's another curious piece of genealogy that isn't actually in Ruth. It comes up in the Gospels. Does anyone know who Boaz's mother is? Anyone? Trivia, Bible trivia. Rahab. Exactly. Who's Rahab? A prostitute, an outsider that wanted to be included in the Hebrew community. She was the one that created a hiding place, a safe space for the Hebrew spies prior to the destruction of Jericho. That she is Boaz's mother, and that Boaz has the standing in the community suggests inclusion. A space was made for Rahab. The outsider welcomed as an insider. This is another aspect of this idea of salvation space, inclusion. This is what Boaz does for Ruth. Even though Ruth is a foreigner, Boaz creates a safe space in the community for her by telling his field workers not to harm her. I'd like to look at another ordinary man who, like Boaz, his ancestor, created a safe space. Now, the birth of Jesus the Messiah took place in this way. When his mother Mary had been engaged to Joseph, but before they lived together, she was found to be with child from the Holy Spirit. Her husband Joseph, being a righteous man and unwilling to expose her to public disgrace, planned to dismiss her quietly. But just when he had resolved to do this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, "Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary as your wife, for the child conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit." Did you notice the safe space that Joseph wants to create for Mary? Rather than a public divorce, he wants to do it quietly to guard her reputation as much as possible, to not disgrace her. This part of the Advent story that preludes the coming of Jesus also has a redirection of Joseph's intent to create a safe space. The angel comes and says, "No, follow through with your intent. Marry her." And that safe space then is that Mary is no longer destined to be a single mom. He includes her and creates a safe space for her. Jesus is the Greek for the Jewish name Joshua. This Hebrew name means Yahweh saves. An unspectacular act by Joseph to protect Mary provides the space for God to enter into our unsafe spaces for his space-making purposes. I love the way the Message paraphrases this idea in John chapter 1. The Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. What does Jesus do in the neighborhood? He creates safe spaces. Jesus hangs out with extortionists called tax collectors. He teaches women, and even more scandalous, a Samaritan woman and her neighbors. He touches the unclean, diseased people. And in these salvation spaces, Jesus creates room for new life. Remember how the definition of salvation in the Old Testament is the creation of space and community for life and conduct. That's what Jesus does. It's the idea of abundant life. Darcy's been talking about the Lord's Prayer. What if we put this lens of safe space on the Lord's Prayer? Maybe Jesus is instructing us to pray for safe spaces. Your kingdom come. This is a prayer for a safe space, and it will be safe because it's under God's rule. It's an Advent prayer that anticipates the coming Messiah and his kingdom and how that will create a safe space. So many of the texts that we read are about this coming kingdom. Well, that preceding line is a prayer for the future kingdom. The next line is an entreaty for safety, now in real time. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Your safety come now. Be here. Create these places for us to live in abundance. And part of that is also then the request for food. Give us our daily bread. Having food is a necessity of a safe space. Without it, we can't survive. Then the prayer moves also to the psychological and spiritual safe spaces by asking that when we get tripped up by temptation, that we will be forgiven and that we'll also extend that forgiveness to others who get tripped up. I think there's a tendency to sanitize, to think that safe places are germ-free, painless, and just relax in the sun as you sit on the beach. I think the Bible shows us that safe spaces are actually quite different than that. For Ruth, that space meant a place where she could glean and provide food for herself and her mother-in-law. Consider the Job. You ever thought of that as Job being in a safe place where he can rant at God and yet not get struck down? God takes it, listens, and responds. And yet Job comes out of it stronger. For Mary, that safe space is not being a single mom. It doesn't mean the troubles are gone, but it does give her a place, a standing in the community. I'd like to circle back to some of the earlier Psalms. And to do this, I'm going to invite you into a little exercise, a thought experiment with me. I'm going to read three of those verses from those Psalms. And what I'm inviting you to do is to close your eyes. And as I read those, and I'll have pauses in between, pay attention to what you notice. Or maybe what you feel as those verses are read. What's it like to be under God's wings? So maybe, yeah, close your eyes. Maybe take a breath, deep breath. Relax. Be gracious to me, O God. Be gracious to me. For my soul takes refuge in you. And in the shadow of your wings, I will take refuge until destruction passes by. Let me dwell in your tent forever. Let me take refuge in the shelter of your wings. For you have been my help, and in the shadow of your wings I sing for joy. So one final prompt with these verses. These psalms speak personally. I, me. What would it be like to share this safe space with others so it becomes we? Thank you for engaging with me on that. Anyone have any comments about that? Did something come up? Or what was it like? Could you imagine inviting others into that space? I find it a challenge to understand safe spaces, because it's never the same for each person. It's not a cookie cutter. As parents, we provide protection from our young children for physical dangers. And yet as that child becomes older and becomes a teenager and adult, that protectiveness actually switches and becomes confining. And so what does a safe space look like? I mean, if it's a physical space, that's easier to understand. It's a place where there's no violence, where there's enough food, water, shelter. But in terms of relationship, it's harder to define. But I think safe spaces might have these traits of loyalty, no judgment, that there's caring, respect, a place to make mistakes and experiment without being condemned. I think it's also a place where we're fully present to one another. And I think a big piece of that is listening well. I have another observation about spaces, these safe spaces. Often the person making that salvation space has become involved and has to sacrifice something to be in that uncomfortable spot. Being a support to a friend in crisis will mean having to give them your time and have a two-hour-long conversation, a difficult conversation, an uncomfortable conversation. Standing up to bullies puts you at risk of retaliation to create a safe space for someone else. It often costs something to create a safe space. And where we really see that demonstrated is in Jesus, because he gave his life, lost his life, to create a salvation space for us. In a few minutes, we're going to be celebrating communion together. And we sometimes talk of that in terms of the Lord's table. Earlier, I mentioned the idea of salvation space is making room for outsiders to become insiders. No longer excluded, but someone that has a place in the community. This is what Jesus did for us. He made it possible for us as outsiders to become insiders and to sit at the family table with him and his Father. Jesus, through his death, his resurrection, allows us to become children of God. We, the outsiders, become insiders. If you have, or you want to, accept Jesus' invitation to be included in the community of God, then come. Let's break bread together. The Apostle Paul talks about an ethic that's involved with sitting at this table, and that we need to guard this safe space. And so he talks about how if we're not in right relationship with one another, We need to fix that. So I also bring that forward to you, that in the safe space, it needs to be guarded. It needs to be maintained. And so that if you've got something that you need to work out with someone, my encouragement is, after today, go and reconcile together. Because that's part of sitting at the table together, that we are in the safe space, we guard the safe space. So my invitation now is for us to come together. It looks like we just have the one table with bread this morning. We don't have the gluten-free by the looks of it. And as you come up together, break off a piece of bread, pass the loaf around, dip the bread into the wine, and welcome each other into the community of God. We are all part of the same family. Oh, sorry. What do we got there, Peter? Oh, okay. Great idea. Peter is going to break the loaf in two, so we will have two tables. But come up together now, and let's celebrate, welcome each other into the family of God.